You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Hello and welcome to Real Living. This is Lavinia Spirito in the studio with my good friend Mary Lou Nemechek. And we are continuing our saga of the recent pilgrimage trip that we took to the Holy Land. We are kind of at the last bit of it, describing to you our trip to Jordan, also know which of course is the nation adjacent to Israel, and describing our trip into the kingdom of the Nabataeans as expressed in the beautiful rose-red city of Petra.
Which is really breathtaking. It was just such a treat to go and visit something so ancient. And having seen pictures and seen it in different movies and so forth, to be there in person was really amazing because you can see the architecture up close and the size and the dimensions of this area. It was really quite large, much larger than I anticipated.
Mm-hmm. And the city of Petra itself was erected, as we said in the last show, around 40, not, well, a little bit before Christ, like 10 BC. To 40 AD. So it's not that old. I mean, your garden variety building in Rome is older, but it's the spectacular architecture and the feat of carving this city out of basically what is a canyon. I think we could call it a canyon, right?
Right.
It's a chasm, a very deep rift in this valley, and they took advantage of the natural geographical features of it to carve a city out of the rock. And very astutely, they place their city at the end of this sort of canyon or, mm-hmm. you know, whatever we would call it, opening up into the city proper.
Right. And there's kind of a series of canyons, and there's a river that flows through the city, the Wadi Musa. And that's really what they use mainly for their water, because it only rains there sporadically. I guess there are some seasons to the weather, but you know, they had to figure out a way to save the water and have it run through the city so that it could be dammed and used later on. All you're looking at is like a red clay rock formations everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's beautiful. I mean, like I think we mentioned it last time, you look at a satellite photo of Israel right next to Jordan, and the whole bottom portion of Jordan is red from space. And so you can see where the word Moab, which in Edom, which is the ancient name for Moab, comes from the word for red. So, you know, you can see from space this satellite photo. When I first saw it, it just smacked me in the face. I'm like, Edom, Esau, red, all these plays on the word red. I'm like, okay, we got it. It's red. But then when you see it from space, it really is red. That whole area, the whole tip of Jordan, the half of Jordan, sort of from Mount Debo, the Madaba Valley, all the way down into the port of Aqaba.
Like, and we were kind of like inland, but along the coast there. Mm-hmm.
It's not far. It's about an hour and a half, 2 hours from Aqaba.
Right.
And Aqaba, of course, is the port on the Red Sea, and that is the Jordanian port, very important port. And right next door in across the border in Israel is the port of Eilat. And Eilat and Aqaba are twin ports, really, in two different countries that are very important for the shipping lanes in the Red Sea. But let's get back to Petra. It was pretty amazing. The bus stopped at the Welcome Center, and we all got out. We put those of us who couldn't really walk very well in buggies with horses, and they awaited us all the way down. But we went in about 2.5 miles that we sent. Mm-hmm. So 2.5 miles in, 2.5 miles out. So a nice walk. And I was very impressed with a lot of us who may have been ill or maybe elderly, whatever. They just
Everybody
trooped
was
on.
Troopers. Yeah.
It was pretty amazing. Although the next time I think I want to go on horseback.
Good. There's going to be a next time.
I think the horseback would be fun. I don't know if you could get a whole lot of people on horseback.
Yeah.
Those horses weren't much to write home about either. You know, I mean, I always have an eye for the horses when I go places. Those poor horses were not particularly well cared for either. So I don't know if I'd want to encourage. Actually, I think we were told not to encourage the people who are offering us rides because the horses are not really well taken care of.
Oh, okay.
So there's an ethical dilemma there, mm-hmm. unless you hire horses from somewhere
but
else and come in.
There's definitely a need for that, for different people to be able to get in there.
Mm-hmm.
And as you walk in the 2.5 miles, you're taking it at a slow pace, but as you're going in, you're actually walking downhill.
Mm-hmm.
And you really, you have that sense.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, until you're ready to leave, you don't realize.
Then you walk uphill for 2.5 miles.
Yeah.
And it's a very, very low grade, but still.
But there's no humidity. I mean, it's very dry. We were fortunate where we had some really nice weather. The
mm-hmm.
the temperature was pleasant and we weren't freezing and we weren't too hot.
So. I know. It was truly the best time to go. And what we did is we just walked in with our guide and we stopped on the way in to the city. There, like I said, there's narrow canyons on either side. It takes a while to get there. And I'm trying to remember, I think it's called a Sikh, is that narrow channel that brings you in.
Right, right.
To the city of
mm-hmm.
Petra.
Mm-hmm.
So I think last time we talked about the fact that people's tombs were more important than people's residences, and that's why we have these tombs. You explained the thing about the columns, the number of columns in front of the tomb explains the number of people.
And walking in, there were sites for the goddess, and I forget the goddess's name. Isis, was it?
Egyptian.
And it's interesting because no matter how old the culture is, it seems like they have their own gods. They have some sort of spiritual relationship with something.
Mm-hmm.
And there were several places where there were, I don't want to call them altars, but there are places where there were like statues or monuments, I should say, to Isis. And it was some of them were easier to see than others. And remember when we went in too, there were also on the rock the camel and the elephant.
Mm-hmm.
And our guide is so smart that he told us you have to stand at a certain place in mm-hmm. order to see it. Otherwise, you would walk buy it and never even
and
notice
never even
it.
See it. I have a photo actually of the elephant. And it's pretty amazing. I didn't really see it when I was there, but then I took the picture. I was like, whoa, that looks like an elephant. So I like to just finish a little bit about the history. It was originated a little bit before the turn of the millennium, so 10 BC to 40 AD. It was a highlight. It was a beautiful city. I think we described the architecture as kind of a mishmash with a very strong Hellenistic Greek influence, but as you pointed out, there is also a lot of influence from Egypt and from other places, if anything spiritual. But it's kind of a syncretistic deal, you can tell, because they have Isis on buildings, and then they have some other Greek deities on buildings, and they've kind of got to mix the whole thing up, which I suppose is what human beings tend to do. It was devastated, the city as it was built originally in 363. It's funny how much that area is prone to earthquakes, the whole Middle
mm-hmm.
East, really.
Mm-hmm.
And Christianity came to Petra in the 4th century when Petra became a bishopric, which I thought was kind of cool. Another earthquake in 551 AD, plus combined with the conquest of the Arabs in 636 with Muhammad, kind of contributed to the destruction of the city. The city was deserted, and it basically slowly sank into oblivion and basically was never even rediscovered. Nobody, I think people knew about it, but they didn't know where it was until a Swiss explorer, Burckhardt, who visited the site in 1812. Now, you know how it is. We're so West Anglo-centric, mm-hmm. European-centric. We talk about it being discovered. For the natives, it was never lost. Burckhardt was told by a native, you want to come in and see a cool place.
Right.
He said, okay.
Abandoned.
And
mm-hmm.
then he quote, discovered it, but really it was never lost except uh-huh. for, And so we have some beautiful, I have the reproductions of the watercolors
so
that he did of Petra in 1821, mm-hmm. which I thought was kind of cool. 1812. Now remember, Napoleon went to Egypt at the end of the 1700s, 1798, 1800, 1801. And so that kind of spurred this fashion for people to kind of go to the Middle East and kind of look stuff
right.
up and kind of, because before that, the whole idea of archaeology wasn't really a thing. Archaeology really started when they discovered the ruins of Pompeii in the 1700s, because before that, it was just ruins. Let's just get rid of them. Let's cannibalize the marble or the gold or whatever.
Right.
Let's build this new building, which is much better than that old stuff. So this appreciation of antiquity and of ruins is a fairly modern phenomenon coming out of the Enlightenment. And so we kind of have the Swiss explorer Burckhardt to thank for this discovery. But it was only in 1929 that Palestine became the object of scientific study and systematic archaeological excavations, which makes sense because when you think about Lord Carnarvon going to Egypt and discovering Tutankhamun's tomb, that was 1923.
Right.
You know, he basically did whatever he wanted. You know, I know his descendants and in at Highclere in England and his castle, there's rooms and rooms and rooms of Egyptian antiquities just kind of came home with grandpa.
That's right.
Interesting. So, you know, there was really until a oversight that was established in the 20s. And then, of course, the whole of Jordan became a kingdom, the Hashemite kingdom, in the 1946 or 1948 or somewhere in there. Now, we've given you a little bit of background, a little bit of history. Let's look at the city plan. Now, remember, we said that it rises in a broad valley surrounded by high mountains. It's approached through a series of canyons. And the Sikh, which is this little narrow gorge carved.
And that's what you always see on TV, too, right. going down that pathway.
Is about 80 meters high. So it's really pretty, you know, it's pretty steep. And you have these rose red rock formations on either side. And as you walk down, you see the various features. You said that you see the tombs, you see the pipes with the water. But the best part really is, and we will tell you about it on the other side of break, is the beautiful approach from the narrow gorge into the famous building known as the Treasury, which ended up really being a tomb. We will be right back.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Hello and welcome back to Real Living. We were keeping you in suspense because if you remember, okay, I'm going to ask a question. Anybody see Indiana Jones?
Of course.
And the
riding up to the...
I don't know if it was a Holy Grail or the Temple of Doom.
It wasn't the Temple of Doom.
I think
it was the Holy Grail,
right?
That was the one with his father in it, I believe.
Maybe it was the third one then?
I think
anyway, so. Anyway, you can let us know if we're wrong. But in any case, it was an Indiana Jones movie where he approaches the temple that supposedly contains the Holy Grail. And basically that iconic moment in history of film history is really him approaching what is known as the Treasury.
Which was actually a tomb.
Which was actually a tomb. But they came across the facade of the building and they said, ooh, this is such a cool building. It has to be the Treasury. You know, interesting way to think about it, that you would have the Treasury all gussied up and not a tomb. But instead, they failed to deal with the fact that the Treasury or the tomb was actually the tomb of a very important person. And when you approach it, you see how amazing the architecture is. Now, we took a long time to look at the tomb. It was the Khaznat al-Faroun, or Pharaoh's Treasury, and it's the most remarkable monument in Petra, really. I mean, you know, it's pretty amazing.
Well, they thought it was the treasury because it had that urn on the facade at the top. And at some point in time, they shot at it to see if there was anything in it. And you can still see the bullet holes.
Right.
So, of course, no one found any money. And upon more study, they say that it was a tomb. It was, of course, a kingly tomb of some sort. And but very well decorated. The columns and everything, the details are just beautiful.
And this is, you know, this is where my snobbishness, my architectural snobbishness comes in, because it really is a hodgepodge of things. If you look at the Corinthian capitals and you look at the Hellenistic elements, they change. I think there's like a different change. There's Corinthian capitals, and then there's different kinds of capitals. The capitals, of course, are the top of the columns holding up the building. You have also all various symbolic elements. You know, there's Castor and Pollux, of course, which are the Greek twins. Mm-hmm. They're the two winged victories in the niches at the back and four Amazons at the side. So that's all Greek mythology.
Right.
The much discussed figure in the center might be interpreted as a cornucopia, a sun disk, the ears of the core. Now, sun disk is obviously Egyptian.
Right.
And it was identified with the Egyptian goddess Isis. And then, of course, they always throw in the local deities, Al-Utsa, the Nabataean goddess. So it's kind of a whole syncretistic hodgepodge, really, of
faiths. But, you know, the picture that you see in the movie and so forth, if you're there in person now, there's like a fence in front of it.
Mm-hmm.
They have started to excavate below it, and there's rooms below it also.
Which they only discovered 3 years ago.
Right. So it's really... it's really amazing.
It is, and it's really the experience of a lifetime, because everybody stops you. You come out of the Sikh in the narrow gorge. You're faced with the treasury, and then in front of the treasury, it's the usual mess. There's camels. There's people hawking. You go, ride, camel ride, camel ride.
Selling you jewelry.
Yeah. And remember, we were told that there's like bands of little kids, like small children,
yes,
like 6, 7, 8, 9 mm-hmm. year old children, who are there with their arms covered in bracelets and want to sell you postcards and whatever. And we were cautioned before we got in mm-hmm. to not buy anything from them, because apparently they're so cute, these children.
Oh, yes,
remember, they're
are.
So cute, and they know some English.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
You know, you want to buy my postcard, you know, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. But their children keep them home from school so that they make money for the family.
Exactly.
And that was, you know, they said they've almost managed to get rid of this phenomena, but there's a few holdbacks. And mm-hmm. anyway, so it was very interesting, because you know how it is in that culture. You can't look at them. You can't talk to them, because the minute you even look in their direction, they take it as you're engaging
them. Oh, they follow
them.
You around. They keep asking.
And so, of course, you know, I had all these wonderful American tourists with me, pilgrims, so tenderhearted, especially the women. And they're going, no, honey, no means no. And so the guy, you know, the little kid on the other end saying, good, I almost have her. You know, you could just see it was funny. I kept telling him, look, don't talk to him, don't engage him. Before you know it, they're going to be right there in your face. And before you know it, you know. Anyway, that was an interesting cultural experience. But it's not just the treasury. It's also a series of other places.
Well, you kind of walk down a pathway, and all of a sudden it opens up this huge city area that's just absolutely amazing. It's huge. And, of course, we just saw a small part of the whole area. But there is a coliseum that was there.
Mm-hmm. A theater. Yeah,
a theater. You can see the niches in the walls where people lived.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there was a temple there, too. It's just huge. It's not as if we're there by ourselves, because, again, there are hordes of people walking mm-hmm. around.
Absolutely. And the people with the camels and the people with the photos and the people with the jewelry. And I do believe there was a little refreshment stand that I saw on the left.
Probably was.
So we saw other tombs. But remember, the tombs are not really tombs as we would think. They're buildings. And so you have the Corinthian tomb, you have the silk tomb, the urn tomb, the palace tomb, the Renaissance tomb, the Roman soldier tomb. I'm just mentioning a few. Bab es-Sikh, the obelisk tomb, which is beautiful. And then you go around and there is, you go around towards the right, and there's like a whole other part of the city. I mean, it was a whole city.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we kept walking and walking and walking and walking, and it was pretty amazing.
And, you know, unfortunately, we didn't have a whole lot of time there. We had time to walk around and take a look at it, but not to really spend hours there
mm-hmm.
because we had to walk back.
We had to walk back. We had 2.5 miles to walk back. And I was like, I'm going to walk towards the end and kind of bring up the rear, because I don't know, you know, how long people are going to last. But I must say, I was so proud of everybody for how they held in. And, you know, when we got back to the bus, it was kind of a quiet bunch, you know.
People were tired. People were hungry at that point in time. But it was, you know, it's a bit of the world that you would never
mm-hmm.
think to go to.
Mm-hmm.
And it was utterly amazing. And there are actually some flowers that bloom there in the desert at certain times of the year. And we saw goats on the hill. It's just really remarkable. Not a tree in sight.
Well, there was actually a couple of trees like the sycamores that grew straight out of the mountain, but they grew to the side,
right?
Because they didn't have enough sun because the gorge was so wide. I have pictures on my phone of this sycamore fig tree growing straight out of the mountain and maybe curving a little bit up where he can get to the sun. So this is a pretty interesting study in adaptation.
I would highly recommend, if anyone has the opportunity to go there, to make the visit there.
Yeah, it's definitely, I think, a once-in-a-lifetime. The whole of Jordan, really, for me, what we saw was...
I was very impressed.
It was so impressive and so beautiful, and you took a camel ride, didn't you? Why don't you tell us about your camel ride?
Well, when we went into that area of the city, we walked around and... a number of us decided that instead of walking back up the hill to where the Treasury Building is, that we would grab a camel and get a camel ride. Mm-hmm. Why not? Mm-hmm. So Father Chris Clay and Linda Wilson and myself got our camels and away we went. And it was really hilarious. The camels were all misbehaving.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And actually, it was great fun because you get to look down on everything. And riding a camel is not a comfortable thing, I must say. Mm-hmm. And they smell. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but it was great fun. We felt like we helped out that part of the economy there. Mm-hmm. And so we did our thing and we had several pictures taken. And I guess we were the three... Musketeers.
The three wise men.
Three wise men something.
The three amigos.
Yes, the three amigos. But we had a great time doing that and saved ourselves a bit of a walk. And then after departing our camels, of course, we were walking back the 2.5 miles.
I know, except that what, Father Chris at a certain point got on a horseback?
He did.
And he rode the rest of the way?
He did. And we all straggled back at different times. But I think... everybody, regardless, you know, this was really a religious pilgrimage. Mm-hmm. And so we were kind of off the track here, you know, outside of that Holy Land thinking to be in another place. Mm-hmm. But you see how the cultures mesh. Yeah. And you also found out that in the 4th century, Christianity was there. Mm-hmm. So there's another example of how the apostles and the first people in the church went out and provided the testimony to take the word out until all the world.
Amen.
And that's, I mean, it's just pretty amazing. And the area of Jordan was Christianized.
Mm-hmm.
You
Absolutely.
Know? And of course, it's not now, but it was.
So, you know, final reflections on our trip to the Holy Land. It was definitely a trip of a lifetime, which I would like to keep taking.
Me too.
Trip of a lifetime. It's the fifth gospel, just seeing where Jesus walked and also where all the other figures in the Bible walked, especially Mount Nebo, like Moses. Who would have thought?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was just gave me more of an eye into the Old Testament and into the other peoples, not just the Jews, but also the Moabites and the Ammonites and the Edomites and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Well, you know, when we went on our first trip, we all bought our Jerusalem crosses.
Mm-hmm.
And a Jerusalem cross has a main cross and there's four smaller crosses on there. Well, there's several stories with it.
Mm-hmm.
One is the four crosses are taking the gospel to the four corners of the world, and the main cross being Jesus, the Word.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is the wounds of Jesus, the four wounds, the hands and feet, and then the piercing of the side, which would be the main cross. And the other one is the four crosses representing the four gospels. And, of course, Jesus' word. So now, you know, when I think about the Holy Land and when I wear my cross every day, it's always in my mind how it all fits together, the Jesus' salvation history being there where it all happened, those group of 12 apostles taking it out to the world, and the evangelization that continues to this day.
Amen.
And how the gospels came about. The Word of God was put out for us, and we have it today.
So bottom line, go to the Holy Land. Don't be scared. It's perfectly safe. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world